Welcome to Off Court, the Business of Sport podcast, where business and sports culture meet. Let's go. Kick it off, Robbie.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Off Court Sports and Business podcast, and we are very, very fortunate enough to be joined by Mitch Creek. How you doing, man?
Robbie, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm going well. It's, we've been blessed with some nice weather the last few days, so that's been good. What about yourself?
Much the same. Training the last 2 days, today mainly. Yesterday was a little bit of just, day off time, get the body right and put the feet up a little bit. Obviously kick things off on Saturday night against New Zealand for game one of the season. And it's just nice to kind of not have the pre-season, running and weightlifting and all that craziness going on with the schedule, 2 days, 3 days. So it's a bit of a light week for us, so I'm just enjoying it as much as I can.
Yeah, have you found the blitz?
Certainly interesting. Obviously, quite a few games being cancelled makes it very hard. It's never what you want. As a player, you just want to compete and play at a high level. Unfortunately, teams were, getting COVID. There were positive cases here, there and everywhere. And other teams have now started to come into serious contact with, multiple people getting COVID on teams. And it's hard. You've got to be really, like we used to use the word, the boomers are morphic. You have to be able to adapt and ability to change on the fly, and whoever's kind of best at that keeps their head and keeps themselves grounded the most. Understanding that, today I might have to, have a false positive or whatever, and I've got to isolate for a few days. Whoever handles that the best, guys in and out, distractions galore, is going to put themselves in a great position come the end of the season. So it's going to be a long year, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It's a real battle of the mindsets a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's going to come down to who mentally is locked in, checked in every day, doing the little things, QRs, your daily, reports you have to do and all the things you have to put in as well. Like, that's going to be the big thing that everyone has to stay really diligent on. And if they do that, then they're going to put themselves in a good position. That team's going to be in a better position in games.
Definitely, for sure. And I mean, the overall kind of quality or the standard of the league, over the last sort of 5 years has just gone to another level, hasn't it? Like, some of the players that, we're able to attract now is pretty cool. And, must be nice for you, for someone who's a bit of an OG in the league, being able to see it kind of really grow and attract some of these players.
It is. And, it's one of those things that over time you do realise that you've gone from being one of the babies and the pups in the league to now being someone that people look at and go, geez, that guy's, he's been around for a few years, he's playing at a high level, and, you can be big pieces in teams and organisations. So to look around and to see that transition myself and then other people as well, I've seen a lot of people kind of come in and do really well. I've seen imports that I never thought would play in this league have played, and, we've had cameos that, have kind of popped in and out of the league as well, we had the Chinese lockout when that was all going on, and, there was just like, so the NBA lockout, and, had guys in China and the NBA going over there, and we had guys come in and join our league, but then you have talented players that have got picked up in NBA rosters, and continually having guys from NBA rosters come here now. It's an absolute credit and testament to what the NBL are doing as a product and as teams are in developing players, young and old, and creating a pathway for people to be very successful. So it's definitely something that, for a lot of people now as kids, you look at and you go, it can compete with footy. It can compete and do those kind of things that, soccer or rugby can do, because we're now attracting better players, more money, more sponsors, TV deals. And that's when, the money starts to come in. So hopefully, before I retire in my time, the money deals go through the roof and, everyone's getting paid squillions of dollars. That'd be awesome, but at the moment, mate, we're just enjoying the growth of the league and where it's going.
Been awesome, and I even saw in the last few days some of your teammates, Matisse Thybulle and Joe Ingles, say that they'd both love to come play in the NBL at some point as well. So internationally, it's starting to get some pretty awesome recognition as well. Particularly with the NBA, and obviously there's been a lot of talk about their pathway system and using the NBL and Australia as a bit of a launching pad. But yeah, it's been pretty cool to kind of see where that'll go as well, because I think it could go in a really unique direction, particularly with that development pathway side that I don't think any other league in the world really has owned at the moment.
Yeah, look, the whole NextStars program they've got is fantastic. It's impressive to see that some of these NextStars are continuing to come back and back again and fall into that category. So it's very intriguing how that rule's being used, I would say. But, you know, we've got to do a good job of using it as well. We don't have one this year at the moment. We need to be very smart with how we approach it, because you want it to be a good pathway. You want guys to come in and do well and, you know, be successful. But at the same time, you don't want to put yourself in a position where, you know, like, you're trying to promise these young NBA talents all this playing time or whatever else, but maybe they're just not up to the standard. You know, we've had people in the past that have come in and thought they might have done a bit better than they were going to do. But really, it's a bit of a reality check and a bit of a gut check, because this league's so bloody talented. There's so many incredible players every single day, just at training, let alone in games and, you know, on the road, and you got fans and people at you and heckling. You know, it's a very hostile environment to play in. It's a very different league to play in. So very fast-paced, very physical. But, you know, see the likes of LaMelo and Giddy and, you know, even guys that are still in this league, like Justinian Jessup, Didi, like all these players that have come in, done well, and then been able to kind of put their best foot forward in the NBA, and albeit maybe they're not there or where they want to be, but they've got contracts in place, and that's what's impressive. And I think the NBA cross NBL is something that's going to be there for a long time. And I think for the young Australians growing up now, you know, it's like, well, I've got somewhere I can go to then go to the NBA if I want to do that. So, you know, Josh was fantastic for us. You know, I thought from day one he was going to be the player he was. We talked a lot on court early in the preseason and stuff. I was talking with him, trying to help him, just the little things and how to compete and how the mindset kind of behind it. And we stayed in touch a little bit here and there, and I'm always kind of keeping a close eye on him. So it's impressive to see, mate. It really is. So it's exciting.
How impressed are you, though, with his impact early? Like, it's basically phenomenal what he's gone in and done, you know, so early.
Yeah, but I'm not really that surprised. I mean, he's a 6'9" point guard that can shoot, dribble, and pass at an extremely high level, and he's very smart. He played against men. He's played against very talented players, very smart, cultural nation. You know, he's played a very physical brand of basketball. So now he's going to the NBA where you are a little protected. There's no, you know, you can't just stand in the paint and, you know, just be like a deterrent, like Bogut or, you know, Will Magne, who guys who can just play split line help and stay there all day. And you're like, well, it's going to be tough to score against because, you know, you got a 7-footer in there beating shit up. He's got plenty of space. So that means with a little less rim protection standing there, you know, you got shooters that are an extra 2-3 feet outside. That's more space again. You know, you just take out one of those things and it's a better game. But so you add one of those things into the Australian game and it's a better league already. You add both those things in, no defensive three, longer 3-point line. It becomes a really, really fun way to play. And for him, you know, he's not blistering quick, but he uses his deceptiveness and his quickness to his advantage when he has those mismatches. And, you know, you've seen, you know, triple-double performances, you know. Like he has, I think it was him, LeBron James and someone else were the only three players on the Melo, I think it was, to have 100, 100, and 100 or whatever else. You know, it's impressive what he's doing, but, you know, for me, if anything, I think he can be better. He can be greater. He can be more of an impact. But I think he's nursing his way in and he's finding his way in the NBA, and I think he's going to develop into a phenomenal, phenomenal talent.
It's pretty exciting for, you know, Australian sports fans to, you know, where we're kind of positioned, because the talent runs deep now. I think, you know, even looking back sort of, you know, I think 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we're kind of like, oh, well, we've got a couple of stars here coming through. But now it's just like, far out, you could pick three Australian teams and, you know, they'd all be competitive against each other.
Yeah, and I think it's the next generation that's being developed into something that, you know, we really need in Australian sport. And you need competitiveness at that highest level. And, you know, you pick the Olympic team this year and you could have another, as you said, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys on that team who can do just as good a role or play a position they need to. That's exciting. Like, that's what, you know, basketball in Australia needs. And, you want to push the envelope. You want to see guys go to the NBA and then have that next generation again go, you know what, I want to be that guy. I want to be Patty Mills. I want to be Joe Ingles. Like, I want to be these great players. I want to be a Josh Giddey. I think it's now giving people more and more belief, and that in itself is what's so rewarding about Australian sport right now, and especially being in the NBL. You have such an impact on people. You really got to open your eyes and be aware, because you don't want to miss out on trying to create someone else's hopes and dreams for them. You don't want to pull them away, but you want to make sure you inspire as many of those as possible.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, I would love if you could screenshot it, chuck it up on your Instagram story, and tag us at offcourt.sport. All right, let's get back to it. Circling back to, we mentioned before about some players that have come to Australia and perhaps not done as well as most people thought they would have or they would have liked to. I feel like, you know, not just a basketball thing, but an Australian sporting thing. I just feel like, you know, you look across like basketball, soccer, even, you know, league, and to a much, much lesser extent, baseball in Australia. When people in international imports come, they think, oh, you know, it's not the NBA, or it's not, you know, it's not the Premier League. I should be able to do my thing here and just and roll along. The weather's nice. And they get here, and Australia, I think they, this is my theory, they underestimate how bloody competitive Australians are on the court or on the field. And it's just, they're never going to make it easy for you, mate. Like, it's going to be an absolute grind. Doesn't matter who you are. And we've seen countless stars come. And look, it's very, like, I don't know if you follow the soccer at all, but Daniel Sturridge has signed for Perth Glory in the A-League, and he's an absolute out-and-out superstar. Like, mate, he's, you know, he's the top class. And it's only very, very early, but there's already some cracks starting to form, and I think, you know, there's players there that are going to be so, like, we are physical. We are really physical in our sport, and, you know, he's in for a rude shock, I think. Is that, like, do you think that's a fair theory to have as far as Australian sports goes and imports coming in expecting it's going to, you know, they're going to have it on their terms?
Yeah, I see it far too often. People come in and you go, you know, we sign someone, for instance, and I message them straight away, and I'd be like, hey, mate, nice to meet you. You know, I've been here since the start of the club. You know, excited to have you in. If you need any help with moving, this, that, the other, you know, plays, offense, defense, you want some game tape, you want to get on FaceTime, let's catch up, we'll go get a beer when you get in, get a feed, whatever it is. The first conversation I normally have with them and we talk properly is, are you in shape? And, you know, are you physically capable to deal with being thrown around? Like, basically, they try and ragdoll you and bitch you first couple of games. And then first preseason game, you get some rest and they kind of welcome you to the league. You get fouled out pretty quick. Joe Chi was on the receiving end of one of those twice now. You know, people were trying to test these guys, and you know, you basically have to figure out pretty quickly that as much as I might have been paid a lot in the past, I might have played in the NBA, I might be, you know, King Dick, whatever it is, you essentially need to make sure that you put that in check and you go, I'm just a basketballer, I'm just a soccer player, and I need to focus on that and get back to the roots of it, because it is a rude shock when you have 20 other guys or you've got another 10 guys at training that beat up on you and you're like, holy shit, I did not expect to come into Australia where I thought the bloody beers were cold, the sand was bloody hot, the women were attractive, and I was on this basketball team living it up, how good's this? And I can't get a bucket. I can barely get a stop. You know, you're struggling. And then the mental, you know, fortitude gets tested. You know, your resilience gets put on display. And it's pretty hard. And as you said, cracks form. It happens far too often. And I don't know if Australia gets the respect it deserves. I think after the Olympics, we should begin to get a little more of that. But as you said, mate, it's a shame that people come in and kind of shit on us a little bit and say, you know what, these guys aren't that fucking good. Well, guess what? You get over here and you wait a few weeks, you start playing against some other teams, and that arrogance and that bravado starts to die down a little bit, and it diminishes. And you kind of get a little wry smile, and I always think about it, and I just remember guys that have given me shit in the preseason, like, who's this crazy white guy? tattoos everywhere and crazy haircuts, and you turn around and you beat up on them and you have, you know, 25, 30 on them, and they're like, holy shit, this guy can play. And then after the game, they come up and they say something, and that's when you earn a bit of respect. And I always think about it the opposite way. I would treat everyone as if they're, you know, Manu Ginobili, you know, if they don't look like an MJ or whatever else, I think of them as a, you know, absolute monster in Ginobili, who just didn't look like much of a basketballer, or he was that crazy or crafty, but he played basketball and you were like, holy shit, this guy's one of the greatest to ever do it. And, you know, you have to give people respect sometimes before they even deserve it. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself kind of gut checked real quick.
And I think that's a good way to look at everything. You know, you don't want to underestimate anyone in life, and treat everyone with respect, and, you know, and then they can prove you wrong if they will. But yeah, tell me about your time in the NBA, because we caught up briefly, I think, just prior to this, and I remember you were mentioning that there were some opportunities on the card. So I was watching it pretty closely to see how it was all kind of unfolding. But I'm keen to hear kind of, you know, the behind the scenes, how it all unfolded, and, you know, what's it like in the locker rooms? Are the egos as big as we think they are?
Look, I didn't play on all the teams. The teams I played on, obviously, like, I never had an issue with anyone. I try to just play my role to the best of my ability, regardless of whether it was being a towel waiver or playing a minute, 2 minutes, 30 seconds, 5 seconds, checking in, shoot free throws. It didn't matter. My role was always the same, and it was just help the team, you know, to be as successful as possible every single possession, every single night. You know, I wouldn't say there's no clashing of egos too much, really. I'd say it's just more that there's people that have their own brand and their own persona, and you want people to express themselves. So we had players that were, you know, pretty outgoing and, you know, dressed really cool and funky, and maybe not the way I would dress or whatever else, or they wouldn't, you know, not my cup of tea all the time. But the thing we all had in common is we loved basketball. You know, everyone loved some of the lifestyle traits and perks you got from it. You got to enjoy being around friends every day and in a great environment to learn and grow. And, you know, everyone got along really well on both teams I was on. And even with summer leagues, like, I've always had a great time doing those. So, you know, you can't fault anything from, you know, the locker room side of things, the development side of things, the coaches, staff, you know, treatment, physios, massage therapists, recovery, everything, managers, rebounders, you know, they had people that would come in and just rebound for you, which was probably the coolest thing I loved about it all.
That's sick.
You know, so they're some of the cool things that happened. But, you know, how it all transpired, I've spoken about it a few times now, but it's one of those instances where you think it's going to go a certain number of ways and it doesn't. You know, I thought for a while I was going to get a contract and whatever else, but it just didn't really come out to be that way and didn't come to fruition, I suppose. And you have to kind of really, like, look inside and go, is this what I want? You know, is giving up everything, moving around the world, taking 15th of the money you could have been making somewhere else, like, is it worth it? And I'll be honest, it was really tough for a while. Like, it's a pretty hard way to live. You know, Long Island sometimes isn't the most appealing place to most people, but I had a really good time there. I had a really good circle of friends. I got along with everyone on the team very well. It's cold as ass. Like, this shit was so cold. You'd have, like, minuses most days. It'd be snowing. Your car wouldn't start. Your battery was frozen. Like, it was just wild. You know, they had snow plows. We had delayed flights and bus rides in these tiny little vans or buses that didn't have any real heating, and you were just cold. And then you get out and you're playing and you've got a bunch of NBA guys on the other side of the line. So, you know, there was a lot of different things that went on behind the scenes. But when it comes down to it, you put yourself in a position to be successful. That's it, you know. You prepare, you know, you practice, you implement it, you repeat that process, you learn and you grow from it, and that's all you can do. And then over time, you give yourself chances for an opportunity. Now, if you take that opportunity well, you get another one, and then you get another one. And that's what happened with me. I was very fortunate to get a 10-day with Brooklyn Nets. I'd earned myself another one straight away, so I had two of them back-to-back. And then ended up getting that kind of cut up and torn up about 5 days in or 6 days into my second 10-day. They had a sign and trade deal and they had to cut someone on the roster. And at the time I was on a 10-day, so mine was the least. So they snipped her up, but I went back, played in the G League. And then, you know, lo and behold, you know, I just stayed the pass, stayed the course. And Minnesota called and said, hey, look, you know, we know you have finals coming up for the G League, but we want to sign you to a 10-day and then for the rest of the season. You know, for me, that was where the reality kind of hit, like, you know what, I'm actually not bad at basketball. Like, I can't actually earn a real spot. Like, this is amazing. You know, you start hearing, you know, your name, not just for one NBA team, but you actually get it on another 10 day or somewhere else. And then you actually get signed to a remainder of the season contract. And that's where a little of that self-doubt that everyone has deep inside, no matter how much you believe in yourself, kind of just goes away. And you're like, okay, I know that I'm good enough. I suppose it's when the proof of someone else giving you the fruits is sometimes enough to be like, oh, I really do trust myself now. And I think since then, my development's gone through the roof, and my IQ and my patience and my mental resilience and, you know, the way I prepare and recover and approach the game has changed because I now believe fully in myself. And people mistake it for arrogance, but, you know, if you believe in yourself so much, you're going to give yourself opportunities, and that's all I ever wanted. So, you know, if people can take that leap out of their book, not to be arrogant, but to believe in themselves, you know, to be proud of the hard work you've put in. Like, I've put in a lot of fucking work. Behind the scenes, no one sees it. You know, sacrifices, injuries, all those little things, all the setbacks, all the naysayers, every single part, the shooting, the workouts, the indies, conditioning, all the sessions, that's where it's worth it, because all of a sudden it's not, you're not doing it for contracts, you're not doing it for money, you're just earning something from hard work and getting your hands dirty and bloody and grind, just working your ass off. And that's the best thing about sport, and I think about life now is, you know, I don't need basketball. You know, I don't feel I do anymore, but I feel like I still love it enough to say, I'm going to keep getting better. I'm going to keep growing. I'm going to keep helping other people get better as well. And if I keep doing that, you know, and I keep enjoying it that way, then I'll keep playing. The day may come where that's not the case, and I'll hang the boots up and I'll proudly say that I gave it everything and left no stone unturned. So, you know, that's all I want for myself and want for everyone else as well.
Love that. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between confidence and arrogance, right? Like, you know, you can be confident without being arrogant, and you should be everyone should be have self-confidence. But on the topic of you know, you mentioned that you don't need basketball. There's a lot of people that struggle with removing their identity away from what they do, like whether that's their occupation or, you know, whatever they do in life, you know, and yours is a prime example, you know, Miss Creek, the basketballer. Was there a certain point where you're like, well, you know, I am my own person. It's not just Miss Creek, the basketballer. I have my own identity. But it seems like you're pretty kind of, you know, you're good with that stuff. You have a good understanding and a deep reflection of who you are. Was there a point during your career where you're like, well, you know, I'm more than this, and you're able to kind of think beyond that or think outside that bubble?
I feel like I knew it for a long time, but I didn't realize it. Like, I knew for a long time that basketball wasn't me. You know, like, it was something I did and that I was, you know, pretty good at, but I never looked at basketball and thought, you know, like, what would I be without it? Because I never thought I'd be without it. But then when you start to realize, okay, well, if you take basketball away from me right now, what am I? And there were so many other answers I gave, and I was like, well, you know, that's pretty eye-opening. And then when the last kind of 12 months that I had, it really made me think about, like, do I even want to play? Like, am I doing this for the right reasons? Like, am I doing it to collect a paycheck, or am I doing it because I love it? Is it because I'm a competitive asshole and I just want to win? I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to develop. And those are the questions I read to ask myself when I was away in America the last couple of months, you know, about 4 months ago. I really like understood that, like, I don't need basketball, and it's not that I don't want it, because I still do want it to an extent, but there was a part of me that said, you know what, there's so much more in this world that I could be doing, and I'm kind of, I wouldn't say I'm wasting my time, but I'm not really putting all of Mitch into the universe where it probably needs to go, and I'd probably put a lot of me just into being a professional fucking athlete. At the end of the day, I hate that fucking word. I think it just makes me feel not okay. You know, I play a sport for fun at a competitive level and I get paid to do it. Like, it's my job in a way, but I do love it. Just like it's a job for anyone else to go work at the bank. If you love it, fantastic. It's not really a job. You're just doing it because you're passionate about it. Now I just look at the world and I'm like, what am I really passionate about? What are the things I'm going to put time into, try and learn with and share others with experiences with? And I just want to explore those things. So, as I said, I don't feel like I need it anymore. I feel like basketball isn't who I am. It's just a little portion of what I do. But I think I'm just becoming more expressive and comfortable with saying, you know what, I don't really need it, but I'm happy to share the other parts of Mitch with people. And if people want it, they can. If they don't, well, fuck off. Like, go look at someone else. Go look at someone else's page. Go and piss off someone else. Go and write a stupid message to someone else. Because I don't care. I don't even read it. I just delete it and I pretend you never existed. And you do a second time, I just block you. All right, you make another profile, well, I'll probably just block you again. I don't really give a shit.
It's like me trying to get you on the podcast. Delete, block.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of times where you just, there's like, let's say 99 messages and I just go delete. And I'm like, I just can't be bothered, because if it's not someone who's directly in my circle, I'm pretty useless at getting back to people. Like, I'm really bad at it. My mum's driving the car and she's nodding her head right now. So, you know, my friends know that I'm not fantastic at getting back, because I do have a lot going on and I do have a lot of things in my life that I focus on and put time into. And yes, there's times to see other people and to have relationships and, you know, to build other things in my life, but you do forget about some of those important pieces and people every single day, and you're like, it's been 2, 3, 4 days since I've called, but it's only because I'm putting my time into things that I need to focus on in order to better myself and my life. So I'm trying to still find that balance. You know, I'm always going to work on that. You know, but it's, as I said, once you understand that you don't need something, and it's not that it needs you, but when you realize you don't really need something and it's not really a vice over you, you have control of it, that's when shit starts to feel really good. And you're like, you know what? I don't feel heavy anymore. I don't wake up in the mornings and I feel like I have this dark cloud over my head or this scratchy feeling in my throat. Like, that's how I felt for quite a while. And I was kind of just putting it deep down inside and wasn't really being aware and conscious of what was going on. So now that I am, you know, I feel fantastic, and you know, I really am excited for what kind of transpires over the next few years.
I just feel like it's just the best attitude to have. And, you know, it's such a healthy separation, because otherwise, like, all your eggs are in, you know, one basket, right? And, you know, if something, you know, bad happens or you have a bad day, it's not just like my whole world comes crashing down. That's one part of your life. It's not everything, you know? So yeah, I feel like it's a really sort of healthy, it's a really healthy mental state to be in. So no, it sounds like you've got it all wrapped up anyway. But mate, I just want to say thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's always good to chat with someone who, is grounded, but still at the heights that you're at. I always find it interesting to get different perspectives, and I feel like you've got a really fresh, grounded perspective. So good luck for the season coming up. I'm sure you're going to have another dominant season in the green and black. And thanks for coming on.
Nah, no worries, mate. Appreciate the time. Love what you're doing, mate. Keep it up. You're doing fantastic things. Sorry it took so long to get on here, but we're on here now. We had a chat, and hopefully we have another one in the future.
Legend. Thanks, bro.
No worries. Thanks, mate.